This is January 24th, 1990. My name is Robert Williams. I am sitting here at the table in the boardroom, Decatur Public Library, with Mr. Al Dobbins, a local resident who has consented to be interviewed for this oral history program. Mr. Dobbins, could you tell me how long you have lived in Decatur?
I've lived in Decatur since 1953. I came here June 17, 1953, and I've been here ever since. I'm living in the same house I moved in when I came to Decatur, and I'm still there.
Where do you reside? What is
806 West King Street. It's a nice neighborhood. I like it. I know a lot of people out there. I've met a lot of people. I've had a chance to work with a lot of people, both young and adults. I've seen a lot of young people grow up in that community, and some of them has gone out and done real good. For some has not done very good. But they still respect you. They come back and they still respect you from childhood days. They remember what might have happened to them. They say to people that you fed my family when we were small. I know what you did. You won't admit it, but I know what you did. And these kind of things, which is sort of rewarding. You enjoy hearing people say things, good things about you. And you just did it because you wanted to do it, but it's still good when you can hear it coming back from another source.
Do you have a family? Do you have children?
I have four children, three grandchildren, four grandchildren, one deceased, and then I have one grandchild, two daughters, two sons. They're all out of the state, one in California, the oldest son, and the youngest son, and the two daughters are in Tyler, Texas. The oldest daughter's an instrument teacher in the school system there, and the youngest daughter works in child care.
You came to Decatur in 1953. Where did you come from, and what was it that brought you to this community at that time?
This is fascinating. I came to Decatur because I passed through Decatur. I passed through Decatur in March of 53, and I met a lady at 855 West King. I brought her cousins from St. Louis to Springfield for that big day. It's Memorial Day. That's a big day in Springfield where they all go out to the cemetery and they come from all over the world back, and they have picnics and family reunions, and all of this happens on that day. And they gather at the cemetery and they talk about their loved ones and they visit with each other, and then they go to different homes for picnics, which has already been arranged. And this is what I did. I drove two older people up from St. Louis to Springfield. I had nothing else to do that day, and they asked me if I would drive them up. I met some real fine people in Springfield, and then we came across to visit her cousin here in Decatur, and I found out that Staley was hiring. So I applied for my job on a Saturday at Staley's. They hired me. I knew that I was going to change jobs in St. Louis as Boys Work Directed Neighborhood House, which is similar to the Boys Club. Used to be neighborhood houses. Now the Boys Clubs are taking over all over. But they were located in low-income areas, culture-deprived areas, out by housing authority, property, and I wasn't wanting to work with the city because they were taking over the jobs. So I applied for a chemist to Staley's, and they hired me. I never worked as a chemist at Staley's because it was 5 years later that they built the research building, and I was way out of chemistry. I had gotten into I guess you call it social work, or into the school system doing something else. And I like that much better. I took a couple of courses at Milligan to improve myself on speech. And I got into drama out there. And I'm the first minority to be a part of Town and Gown fraternity. And Dr. Mickle and the late Mrs. Edith McNabb was there then. Very fine people. I had a chance to meet a lot of good people. I had a chance to be in plays and show my ability, what I had learned in dramatics in years gone by, because I was in dramatic clubs throughout my college career. So I had a chance to be here with Town and Gown, and it was a lot of fun. Dr. Mickle was over Town and Gown, a very fine person, brought some very outstanding people here through his years of working at Milligan University. And you just had an opportunity there to meet a lot of good people. And I got involved in things like the Boy Scouts. They transferred my record from St. Louis with the Red Cross, which I didn't know the Red Cross chapter here even had my record until they came and told me I was to work motor service, and this is when they were having their first blood mobile at Staley Company. And they took me up there for my department, and I worked blood mobile. Just have it for 3 days, and early in the morning, and like 5 o'clock in the morning, and then you stay until 2 o'clock that day, and then you come back so you could take in all shifts. And it was kind of nice to do that. Everybody was surprised, and I was surprised that the Red Cross chapter here had my record from St. Louis, where I had started in Red Cross. And they made me chairman of motor service of Red Cross. And from that, we went out and got 40 drivers and organized driving and helped set up Progress Day School. In its beginning, we furnished transportation for 3 years through the Red Cross to Progress Day School, and that was until they saw what until the community saw what Progress Day School really meant, because there were so many retarded children behind closed doors that nobody knew about. The fascinating thing was that the people that helped start Progress Day School were from Texas, and we didn't live too far from each other. And the lady worked in the department store for the people that I worked in their home as a houseboy. And we learned about each other after we got started. And she finally said, "Are you Alfonso?" And I said, "That's me." And she said, "I remember you." And then we began to talk and remember back then. Progress Day School is a very valuable tool to this community. And it went out and it grew and it grew and it grew. It started at 30 UB Church, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays. Then it moved to North College, and then it moved to West Wagner. And from West Wagner, it moved to its present location now in North Maple. That's when they built the school and improved it. And Mrs. Sossman was the director for many, many years, and she did a beautiful job. That was rewarding to be able to do that. It was a schedule that there were other people who worked with me in scheduling the drivers for Red Cross. Mrs. Shelley Holland, Juanita Holland, as we know her, she's chairman of Blood Mobile now. The late Mrs. Myrna Ventures and late Mrs. Evans, they were part of the team then in doing it. It wasn't one person doing it. It was a lot of us doing it. But we got it done. It was meaningful. Along with being chairman of Motor Service, we went to Danville every Tuesday. We used to go to Macon Acres Nursing Home, which is out where the Adolph Myers Mental Health Clinic is now. Those ladies would shop, and Red Cross ladies would shop, and they'd come back. We had a junior Red Cross, used to go to Chanute Field on Sundays and entertain the soldiers there in the hospital. And we went all around junior Red Cross doing a lot of shows in small communities, Argenna and Blue Mountain, those places at the community centers in those places, which was a good promotion for Red Cross and letting people know about Red Cross and encouraging young people. And these were high school students. They had a lot of talent, and encouraging them to grow up and be a part of an agency like Red Cross or other agencies that's meaningful in a community that has a real background of helping people. From chairman of a motor service in Red Cross, they made me chairman of community service, and this was a new program, and out of this program grew the good grooming program. This is where you taught the young people to take a bath and wash their teeth and show them clean linen on beds and all. 30-minute skit. It was called Good Grooming, and three of us did it. And we were in Red Cross uniforms, and we did it to over 10,000 kids. And we followed the school schedule. We went from school to school every day doing this in the mornings. And the program was about 27 minutes long, and this gave the other 3 minutes for the classes to come in and the others go out. And it worked real good. Then we had a conflict with keeping up with the scheduling of the schools because they started busing, and we couldn't make our schedule meet that schedule. So that program wasn't done on a regular basis, but there were still groups that called for it because they thought it was good. Some of the people who had started working with Decatur Macon County Opportunities, and they wanted young people to see this because they were working in the area trying to keep them clean. We set up the demonstration at the Red Cross office. And then some of the former principals called for the service again anyway. They thought it was good, and they just wanted to come out and see it, let their children see it, let their classes see it. It was a serious program. Then it was a lot of laughter into it. We made it funny, and things like a newspaper could be a doormat in the winter. Set your winter boots on this and throw the paper away. It could be used for a trash basket, pack it in the trash can, and then throw it out in the garbage. If someone got sick and there was a beautiful bedspread on the bed, and throw some newspaper down and then lay them on the bed, and then if they messed up the newspaper, you could always throw it away. We gave them the basic of cleanliness, and everything we talked about was clean, so we said, a nice clean mattress, a nice clean mattress cover, a nice clean bottom sheet, a nice clean top sheet, a nice clean blanket, a nice clean spread, a nice clean pillow, a nice clean pillowcase. Many of the youngsters did not know that all of that went to a bed. They thought that a quilt and a mattress without a sheet, or just as long as you covered up. And many of them slept on mattresses. We told them they could take a bath without having a shower or a bathtub. They could bathe from a pan. And we demonstrated this. Like, you pour the water into the pan, and you take your wash rag and your soap, and you go washer, washer, washer. And that was kind of the way you were talking to elementary children, so you had to talk a language. And they laughed about that. That brought laughter into it. When you see people, the other day at Sears, I saw a young man, and he told me I taught him how to brush his teeth at Oldsby School, and I had to laugh. I couldn't believe that. He said, yes, you did. He said, you gave a demonstration. And he's a nice young man. He's doing real good. He's got a good job. He told me what he was doing. And he still remembered me after all of those years.
One never knows how you touch the lives of young people when you're working with them that way.
This is very important, and it makes you think about it more and more when they come back to you. And when you say this to people today that are working with young children, they must be very careful in what they do or what they say, because they can turn their lives, but they can still touch their lives. And you have to really keep this in mind. This is a young child. Am I building for them, or am I tearing them down? Which is a thing that's a big question in today's world. What are they doing? What are we doing for our young people? When you look 29 years back or something and someone says something good about you, it's a rewarding thing, because that isn't said about many people. So you have to be grateful that whatever you did is still there.
Even something as simple as teaching someone how to brush his teeth.
Right.
It's important, fundamental. Let me ask a couple of questions, Mr. Dobbins, that might just clarify a couple of things. Was your had you had training in Texas or in Missouri for social work in college that qualified you to work with the boys' clubs or the predecessors of the boys' clubs?
Yes, I was an ag major, and I graduated from Tennessee A&I University in Nashville, Tennessee. They say Tennessee State. Being an ag major, you have a background of a little bit of all of it. You get into sociology, you get into economics, you get into accounting, you get into bookkeeping.
Veterinary work.
Veterinary work, poetry, you name it. And then when you go out to be an ag teacher, you have to work in the community with the young people, I'll say with the boys as an ag teacher, and they had to have projects, growing hogs or whatever. Then you had to work with the adult also. So this gave you a chance to get out in the community, to meet people, to help people, to see people change, and to see them be happy about their change. One of the places that I worked, I was a on-the-job training veteran teacher, and I had the veterans, and I taught them how to farm.
Was that in Tennessee?
That was in Texas.
In Texas.
This was where you sandy soil, so you only needed a mule and a plow. Cash crops, watermelons, peas, sweet potatoes, and sweet corn, whatever cash crops they wanted. But along with this cash crop, this veteran had to have a milk cow, chickens, a hog. This is where they did this on their own. They didn't go buy all of this. This made their household, and they had to have these things so that they would know that this went with it. You don't go buy milk when you're on a farm and you can have a milk cow. You don't go buy chickens when you can grow them there on your farm. So you grew some corn where you could feed your chickens, and a lot of times the chickens ran out in the chicken yard, those things. But it was a self-sufficient thing where even with the crops that they grew, they wouldn't have to spend the money for selling those cash crops for what they had. This turned out to be a good program in the area where I worked. I went back a few years back, and I went out to see some of these young people, some of those veterans that I work with. They had beautiful homes, nice cars, and they called me Fessa. And this was fun. That's usually a southern slang, is a fessa. Some of them didn't recognize me, so we had fun with them until they recognized me. And I said something to them about, do you have your record book? And they said, fessa. And, you know, this is 25 years later. And then they let the hat on, and you just really get to know each other again. And you get comments about, you haven't changed at all. Look at you. Just look at you. You look the same age. These kind of things, which is good, and you encourage them. The thing of working with people, if you have worked with people in any capacity, you would expect for what you have done for them that they would live better than you. Don't be jealous of that. Congratulate them. If they've been successful, congratulate them and encourage them, and everything you can pile up on them to motivate them, do that. Because you're talking 20 years older than they are, or these kinds of things, and you can't go back and pick this up, so encourage them that they will keep going and be happy and be successful in the endeavor of work of what they're doing. This was a good thing. In rural communities, you had canning centers and all those kind of things. And of course, that had to be set up by the ag teacher or the home ec teacher. You worked together as a team along with your extension ag and home extension group. And you worked in a team. Of course, they came out to your community. You knew better how to do it in your community than they did. So they listened to what you had to offer, and then they added to it, and you got together and you made a real program. There was one time you had the mattress factory, that's why you made your mattresses, and the cannery was so many families come every day, but they were already scheduled in. One day you can corn, the next day you can tomatoes, and you're talking about each family taking home at least 100 cans of this so they can have it all winter. And this was where they preserved their food, so that they wouldn't have to go buy any of this.
Would you see any value in that type of thing in our community today?
Oh, we need it right now. Of course, when you talk to me about that, you get into what I'm with now is Green Thumb. And this is what we're doing. This is what this program is in Green Thumb.
Tell us about that.
Well, Green Thumb Operation is a program, outreach program of the Macon County Chapter of the American Red Cross. It started in 1970 with 19 families in the trash pile on South Broadway. And it was a trash pile, only little points.
Was that where the waterworks is located now?
Where the waterworks is now. And we worked there for about 4 years, a little spot of land wherever we could find it. With all the raccoons and the possums and whatever else was running around down there. And when we set it up, we said that if you would clean this part of the city, people riding down 51 Highway would take a look and they would see Mueller Park, which is a beautiful park. And maybe this would encourage them to set a business up here. Well, we said that in its beginning, and we went down one day, and a man said to us, what's your Green Thumb project? Naturally, when you don't know people, you aren't sure how you should receive them, and you come along with something about, oh, just grow gardens and move on. But then a second contact with this individual, he was very plain, saying, what's your goal in the Green Thumb? And of course, this was a whole book when you asked that, because we wanted to clean the area. We wanted it landscaped. We wanted at least 100 families in the project because we knew that this was something good. We were talking about families with 10 kids and down the line. And this would certainly help them in their homes and help them have nutritious food, especially the fresh vegetables from the garden. So we told him this, and he said, I like your idea. Would you send a bid to us? Let me see what I can do. And we did. We sent a bid to him, and he accepted the bid. It was on up into the thousands of dollars, but he accepted the bid, and he remained anonymous. And we explained to him why we'd like for him to remain anonymous, because if you give this much money here, somebody's going to come and say, why don't you give me some money? But what they're doing might not be something that you can see through. And he finally agreed that that's a lot of money. You know, maybe you should talk about it. And then he come back and said, no, so don't say a word about it. Who gave it to you? So we didn't.
Has your work with the Red Cross been volunteer work, or have you been a paid employee of the Red Cross, Mr. Dahlman?
40 years of volunteer.
That's amazing.
That's no pay. There's no pay in Red Cross.
All of this in addition to your full-time job at Staley's when you worked at Staley's. When did you retire at Staley's?
I retired in, last day of work was November the 10th, 1986, but I didn't retire until March of 87. But I didn't work anymore after the 10th of November in 86. In those years that I worked at Staley's from 1961 to 1974, I worked for the Decatur public school system, being its first noon supervisor and playground supervisor when the program was in its days of seeing whether you should have it. This was at Washington School.
I remember that.
And while at Washington School, a few days after I was there, I said to the principal of Washington School, you need a home visitor. And he said, what are you talking about? And you need someone to go out here and tell the families that they should send their children to school, that every day that they're absent, the school system is losing money. If John Doe is sick at 7:45, then 8 o'clock, he's walking the street across in front of the school. He wasn't sick at 7:45. When this was presented to the downtown Call building, it wasn't accepted at first by the administrative staff there, the superintendent, Mr. Grant at that time, the late Mr. Norman Goh and Ms. Charlotte Meyer. They said, you can go to black homes, but you can't go to white homes because you'll cause a disturbance. And when the principal, Mr. A.R.F. Boxell, had to tell me this, he was hesitant in telling me, and I laughed when he said it, because I grew up next to a plantation in Texas, so that was nothing new, seeing things and where you were told you couldn't do something. And I said, fine, I'll just go where they want me to go. But it wasn't but a few weeks that Mr. Boxell himself went to a white home. They wouldn't even let him in. So when I got to school, he told me about it, and he wanted me to go over there, so I did. And I brought the little boy back to school. It was a situation where the shades were down, the doors were closed, and kind of not a nice thing. But anyway, I brought him back to school, and this is when he says that I would visit all homes, and I did. I gained a lot of friends. At that time also, I worked with special education kids from Cantrell Hall, Of course, we worked with all the girls out of Webster Hall that had been displaced because of families. And we worked with all the families in the culturally deprived area on Water Street, Main Street, South Main Street, Broadway, you name them all down there, Duranda, Jackson, the whole shebang.
This is Robert Williams again, continuing our conversation with Mr. Al Dobbins of Decatur. You moved to Decatur in 1953, I believe you said, Mr. Dobbins.
Yes,
and
I
at
did.
That time, the civil rights laws had not been enacted by the Congress, and I rather suspect that you must have encountered, as you indicated, having grown up next to a plantation, and evidences of discrimination in dealing with the administrators in the school district here for a while in your volunteer role, you must have encountered a number of other occasions when you were the victim of discrimination, both overt and subtle in those early years of residence here in Decatur. Do you recall any of those, what it was like?
Oh, yes, sir. We, our family increased, and we looked at several homes, and we couldn't buy those homes because of who we were. We played some games with calling on the phone because our voices are different. We're so mixed. And you'd ask the person about the home, and they would say yes, and when you got there, they would say no when they saw you. I saw them turn veterans down for homes that they wouldn't let them buy. And I was told that I could, even when I wanted a loan, being here just a few months and we wanted to buy, they told me that I had to go to a certain real estate to buy my home. And I thanked them for it, and then I went on. They recommended Harmony Realties, which was good. Mr. Joe Slaw was a great person, but I had an opportunity to meet other people because of my community involvement, Red Cross and Boy Scouts and those things. And I knew other people that I could go to. also to get a loan to buy a home. I went to J.D. Johnson, and Mr. Johnson said to me, "I'm going to try you. You just got here, but I'm going to try you. You look like a nice person." And he did. I'd only been here a few months, and that's who we bought our house through. And he was real impressed with us. We paid our bills, we paid for our house, we met our obligations. And maybe doing that, he took a look at some other people also, at least I hope so, that we proved, because of us being colored, I think that's what they called us that time, Negroes or whatever the other names they used, that he could depend on. All people weren't the same. There were some people who paid their debts. Of course, they say that then, but there are a lot of people that don't pay their debts, of all races and walks of life, of people, businessmen, just a lot of things. As the years go on, you find this out, but sometimes when they get you over here in this corner and they say you're the only one, you don't look any further, you think, well, this is it, but that's not true. We got the place. It was a lot of older people living in that neighborhood. It was a lot of children in that neighborhood. And our house became the place where they came to play and sleep and eat. And we played ball with them and all of those kind of things. So we sort of grew up with them. And we had a good time. You encountered things on your jobs. They looked at the other person and you never made it. That was all the things that you had to work with. Now, I set up Washington School, was the school that brought the gifted money to Decatur because of the programs. Both the teachers and the workers and everybody were the guinea pigs, whoever was working with it. Because they didn't know whether it was going to work. I was a part of the program when the state people came here, and 27 of them, and they brought the Title I money to Decatur. I was on program that day and made a presentation. So I guess I was part of the thing that happened there. Frontiers is a service club, which I'm a member of, and we do special projects. And 1963, we did the special project for Head Start. We made visits and worked with the program there in Washington. And in 64, we went out and worked with the schools that were basically summer schools that were helping slow learners. And each member of the club was assigned a school, and the teacher would call when the student wasn't there, and the club member would make the visit with the parent. And those children started going to school, parents started going to the programs, and that summer they had the program at Durfee School, and those parents had the auditorium full. Out of the Head Start program, as we made home visits, we had a little booklet and a lesson plan. And we would read to the children to start with, and we'd leave a booklet and a lesson plan there with them so that their parents could help them, older brother, sister, someone. But many times you returned, they were on the same page because nobody had helped them. We found out that a lot of the parents couldn't read. This became confidential information that was given to the teachers, and they worked with these children in a different way, and they set up a lot of special programs at Washington School working with children. Out of this came the Self-Start program, because we saw the little children there in the home, and the Self-Start program got started. Frontiers helped with it. The Central Christian Church helped with it once, and then it went back and forth in Knights and Family Service. So when most people look at Head Start or Self Start under Decatur, under Anna Waters' program, Self-Start and the Family Service, they really don't know that a service club had a lot to do with it. One of the classes of Self-Start is housed at Frontiers Community House in Mueller Park, which we have redeveloped park. And we got all new stuff down there now. New lights, new plumbing, new heating, new building. The family that lived across the street from Mueller Park 50, maybe 55 years ago, the
Trovato, Perino, Ropa,
the people who work with Love Unlimited, those sisters.
Nottingham.
Lucille Cottrell. They came back for a reunion down there one year.
I missed that. I wanted to go, and I didn't get there because that was my old stomping ground.
They were glad to have it, and they were just happy to see the park looking like it was looking. And today, if you go by Mueller Park, you see a different situation, and it's going to be more. This is all done by the Decatur Club Frontiers International, which is a service club, and people don't see a lot we do.
And you've been very active in that over the years.
I'm a charter member of Frontiers International, and service is our business. We started buying clothes, feeding children way back in the 60s. We were feeding the late Mr. Russell had a basketball team in Eisenhower, and good team, but most of those team members came from families where they couldn't have a hot lunch. So we started paying for hot lunches for them way back then. When we got into the elementary schools, we put cereal in the principal's office so that when a child hadn't had breakfast and was a little naughty in the room, give them a bowl of cereal and work with them. We did it at Washington School. I was home visitor there, and when the children didn't act quite right, they sent them down to me, and I talked with them, took them for a ride, found out what had happened. They told you a lot of things. Then you'd make a home visit, and you'd see dirty dishes and things, so you would know that the child was normal. Just like anybody else, when you're hungry and you can't eat, you don't feel good. So that's a normal thing. Out of that program, Home Vista program, they have Home Vistas now. East Shade is doing a real program with it. She has readers and just all kind of things. They broke the program up because I was both the Home Vista, reading to the kids, doing the whole thing as well as attendance, but now they have an attendance officer in the school system, and that has changed. But it started at Washington, and also at Washington School, they have a bathtub. We put a bathtub there, and the kids took baths.
There was none there when I was a student there back in the 30s.
Right. Well, it's right there now, right off of the auditorium. You go going down the hall, and you walk right in that room there, and there's a bathtub. Now they have a wash and a dry. And the lady over that part of the program at Washington School was a student there when I was there, and she says, we're still using that bathtub. I still don't think it's a bad idea. Frontiers put shower spouts in Mueller Park, hoping that we'll eventually get the kind of supervision and have insurance that will cover the park board. Excuse me. That after the children has participated in an activity, they can take a bath. It certainly adds to them feeling better and all, but we realize that insurance, somebody to supervise them while this is happening, is a real thing. But we hope that someday in the near future that it will be used.
It's obvious that a person like you has the ability to open doors and get people to open their doors to you, Mr. Dobbins, from what you've said. But getting back, you indicated that you did have some problems early in getting a loan to buy a house. Were there any other places in the community where you found doors were not open to you because of your race during those years that
you... Oh, yes. You couldn't go in places and eat. The Y wasn't really open to you then. They used to have teenage dances. But those teenage dances were only for the white kids. The black kids didn't go there. Furnished transportation to the retarded children to swim in Southside Country Club, and I had to schedule drivers and get the children there because the Red Cross took them. But in the summer, there were no black retarded kids. They were all white. I did ask the question, why is it it's only white retarded kids?
In the summertime.
In the summertime. But I went out. We went out many, many times. I took my kids with me to ride in the wagon. We sat there and watched the kids swim. And we would take them back home. But those are things that you actually saw happening. At that time, being a part of Red Cross, a lot of these people were members of both the country club, both country clubs. One of the things that I found, you just say, yes, there's discrimination, it's even still today. But you just can't sit there and beat on it. There are things that needs to be done, so do that. But tell people the truth. There is discrimination. There's a way of getting by, sliding under, moving things. One of the things that I found in Decatur is that people will take your ideas and advance them. And they go places, but they take your foundation and build it. Everything has to have a foundation, so somebody's got to build a foundation. Now, in the Frontiers Club, the Frontiers is a catalyst. We set up all these things that we've talked about, but look at them. We set up the program Summer 63, and that's where your Head Start came from. We set up the program in 64, that's where your Self Start came from. 68, we got the building down there, and we talked about a club.
This was that the one in Mueller Park, or
yeah,
the building on Cantwell Street? You had
Mueller Park. Mueller Park. And this is where we started talking about boys, so you got your boys' club. We said that you need a health program for low-income people, so forth and so on. You got CHIC. We say you need somebody to go in and take care of the older people, so you got community home environment learning CHEP. You know, where else do you go in being a catalyst for setting up programs? We do the shoe fund. You hear junior welfare and everybody else doing the shoe fund. Love Unlimited is giving away all of these good things now. We gave away furniture and clothing in Mueller Park, but since Head Start came, Self Start came, we don't have a place to sew furniture, so we don't have furniture. But we started that in the 60s. In 1975, Frontiers remodeled the first house in Decatur in the 800 block on West Marietta. Now you have community development doing it all the time, reaching more people. In the Green Thumb, we developed the land down where the water treatment plant is, and everybody in Decatur benefits from it because the land was there to be selected for this kind of thing. Just unfortunate that I was chairman of all these things, and
not unfortunate at all.
I had something to do with it, but it wasn't that I did it all. It's the group that you work with. Everybody in the group did something, and this is where a lot of people make mistakes. They say, "I'm chairman. I'm head of this," but they shouldn't take all the credit. You took these other sports in that wheel had to do something to help make it go.
I think the community is the beneficiary of much of insight and wisdom over the years, Mr. Dobbins, and I know that the community appreciates it, even though, as you indicated, in some cases other people take it and run. You have been a great innovator, and you've spawned a great number of ideas. It's quite obvious from what you've said here today. Could you tell me just a little bit about people here in this community that you feel, it's obvious that you have had an influence on the lives of a great number of other people, just from the things you said today. What people do you have in mind, or what kinds of people do you have in mind in this community that might have been role models to you in the period of time that you've been here in Decatur?
Oh, ministers has been a great role model. We had ministers when I came to Decatur. Of course, I grew up with ministers that were role models. Being a Southerner and coming up through the years from Texas to St. Louis, St. Louis to Decatur, ministers were great leaders in communities, and we respected them. They had real leadership, and they exemplified this kind of leadership. And they gave the know-how, and they worked in communities and built communities. Teachers were great. I remember my social studies teacher had two suits, a black suit and a brown suit. So he would change suits every other day. He had a brown pair of shoes and a black pair of shoes. He kept those shined. His mother took in ironing from the West End, the white families, and she had a smoothing iron. She ironed his shirts, used that faultless starch, and just kept them perfect. He was a real role model. We couldn't go to his class without a tie around our neck. If you had on a t-shirt or something, you put a tie around your neck. We thought it was silly then, but we found out it had a lot of meaning to it. I learned then how to go and apply for a job. I learned that if your shoes were shined and your hair was combed, that's important. You can have on $1 million suit and your shoes not shine, it doesn't go. It isn't accepted. I learned that you have to smile, that you go into a place and you are waited to be invited to sit down. If nobody ever invites you to sit down, stand up. Those are some of the things that were role models. Those are some of the things that has seemingly has helped me. My parents were role models. They said, work for everything you get. Don't take nothing from anyone. So that's what I learned from the start in life, that you work for it. And I used to work for a stack of whole cart of wood for a quarter. We got 12 cents a piece, and we took the penny and bought a penny piece of candy and broke it half in two, so we got our half that.
In all of your volunteer efforts here in this community, you've given us a good background to many of these programs you've been involved in. What one do you think you would single out as being the most gratifying to you insofar as your own goals in life may be concerned? Is there any that you could focus on?
I'm not sure. They all tie in together. I'm not sure about picking any specific program. The ongoing program of Green Thumb at this point is a program of necessity. We're working on the Green Thumb program for 1990 now, and it should expand. We tried to get a cannery here a couple of years ago. It didn't come through. Of course, we had bad summers and we didn't have the beans and things, and this cannery costs a lot of money. It's one unit that comes, it's a unit that you get, and it's all right there together. But since we didn't get the cannery, we had pressure cookers, and we did do some food preservation. This year, we hope to do more food preservation with the cooperation of the Extension Office. As we throw away our peanut butter jars and our mayonnaise jars and all those, we can buy some tops, save that jar, and we can put a lot of stuff in there. They would just reach upon the shelf and get fresh food. This food is fresh. That's one of the things that you can assure yourself that it's fresh. So this is something that you don't have to worry about buying, and you don't have to worry about having the money to buy it. You can take $1.50 and grow some green beans and have enough green beans to last you all year, because you can preserve them. This would be a good program indicator right now if some more groups would come in and assist with the expansion of the program, and then work with the food preservation of it, motivate our young people, and see how many programs we can get to help young people to realize that the vegetables just doesn't grow on that shelf in that store, that they grow, but they grow out on the soil, and that they can be grown, and you can enjoy them. The senior part of it is that rather than the family planting all of those flowers, which are beautiful, within that flower bed they could put about 4 tomato plants, be enough tomatoes to last them all year. A couple of pepper plants, be it bell or hot pepper, trifle, cabbage, and people can freeze cabbage and take care of them and have them for later use in later in the year. Plant a little few things of sweet corn, and you take that sweet corn off and freeze it and have it later. All of these things can be grown in small quantities, which you would call a mini garden, and they can certainly be used today. We have and I fit into this category, retiree, fixed income. Today something comes out that you'll get $2 more, tomorrow it comes out that you get $2 less. All of these kind of things might come a period where they say, well, for a month you won't get nothing. Then how are you going to eat? You got to go buy everything. How are you going to buy it? You don't have any money. And as you look at these kind of things, it would be good to develop programs where people, okay, if I don't get a paycheck, I can still live, and you must eat. So I'll have this year to eat, and I'll wait for the paycheck. That's just the way of life, and a lot of things happen to us. The Gardening Project is a project where there are people that are resource people in this project that didn't have a lot of education, but they know how to work with the families. They help the families grow vegetables. They give them their know-how on it. They grow their garden right along with the families, and they work and keep it clean, and the families see them out there as a resource person keeping it clean. So this is motivating. You have a committee and you have resource people. Of course, everybody becomes resource persons during the growing season, and everybody's out there helping and doing what they can. The resource and the committee, and whether it was all of us or two of us, it was the committee and the resource people that had the garden down in Niantic for the last few years. And last year we gave sweet corn to 1,100 families and gave turnip greens to 2,424 families. That was just from one spot. That didn't include how you gave it around to other families from time to time. So you're talking about a lot of people that benefited from it, that program.
Your background, your education, your training in agriculture, and your love of the land certainly are reflected in the work you're doing then in the Green Thumb, and it's obvious that you're a very fine teacher. And just we've got about 5 minutes left here, maybe not quite that much. What recommendations would you make that you feel might improve the quality of life in Decatur here as you look, say, into the coming century? You intend to be around, I know.
Right. Hope I'm right. The quality of life, we'll have to start in the homes with parents working more closely with their children. We have children, rearing children today, so we've got to find a way to teach those children that are parents how to rear their children. We want to motivate people into being self-sufficient and not just living on public assistance and doing nothing, just waiting for a check. And if that check doesn't come, they're lost. And of course, they're upset and they're mad with everybody, the mailman and everybody else. We need to have people to realize that since the medical people are saying drugs and alcohol are affecting babies, which doesn't have a chance from the beginning, that if they want children, that they would stay off of alcohol and drugs. Most of us know that our foreparents, our parents before us, believed in the church, and that's where they went from. And everybody should find a church to go to, whether it's out in the middle of the street, whether they have church service in the park, whether they have it out on the corner. If they're having it there, go to it. The Lord is the one that gives all of us what we have, and we have to go there and have this knowledge, and then we have to believe that the Lord is responsible for us. And I asked the question to people of, if you don't believe in the Lord, why do you think you're here? Who do you think, your man couldn't do this? And point out, the sun shines, man can't make the sun shine. The rain comes, man can't make it rain. The acid rain is affecting the crops and everything else that man has made. So have them to look to God. Churches should do more work in a community than what they are doing today, other than just going there, having the services, and going home. They need to go into the highways and the byways and compel them to come, and that's what the book says, and get out on these corners.
I hate to cut you short, Mr. Dobbins, because what you have to say is most important. I've certainly enjoyed this opportunity to share with you your thoughts on these subjects. You are truly one of Decatur's advantages. This is I'm Robert Williams. I've been visiting with Mr. Al Dobbins, who has, as you know from listening to this, been very active in Decatur Community Affairs in the past 35 years or so since he's lived in this community. Thank you very much, Mr. Dobbins, for coming today. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.